Welcome to The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Tuesday, September the 29th, 2020. On this episode of The Politocrat, debate night. Tonight is the first debate between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. The first presidential debate between the two candidates tonight. Coming up, a preview and a look at other debate moments, and also recognizing the importance of your own state of mind. And we're now just 35 voting days away from November 3rd. That is coming up next.
I recall yet that President Kennedy had to go for days on end with very little sleep during the Cuba Missile Crisis. Is there any doubt in your mind that you would be able to function in such circumstances?
Not at all, Mr. Truitt, and I want you to know that also I will not make age an issue of this campaign. I am not going to exploit, for political purposes, my opponent's youth and inexperience.
It is not just age, it's accomplishments, it's experience. I have far more experience than many others that sought the office of vice president of this country. I have as much experience in the Congress as Jack Kennedy did when he sought the presidency. I will be prepared to deal with the people in the Bush administration if that unfortunate event would ever occur.
Senator Benson?
Senator, I served with Jack Kennedy. I knew Jack Kennedy. Jack Kennedy was a friend of mine. Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
Oh, welcome back. Those two clips are the two of the most memorable clips in debate history in the United States. The first clip that you heard was from Ronald Reagan in 1984, and his questioner, Henry Truitt from the Baltimore Sun, had asked about whether or not Ronald Reagan would be up to the task of doing certain things in his age and this and that. And Ronald Reagan, of course, ever the actor and the destroyer, by the way, of course, you know, he was one of the worst presidents this country's ever had. You wouldn't think so by all the hagiography that's being done about him, but he really was. He's the one, and I've talked about this before, who set into motion all of this destruction of infrastructure and all of this regulation, a deregulation. It's of finance and the markets and of these companies. It's just horrible. At this debate in 1984, he used that line that you heard. I will not use my opponent's youth and inexperience. And that's a great line, though. I mean, you know, never mind the fact that he'd fired all the air traffic controllers, 3 years prior. Unions had been crushed under Reagan. He really gutted unions and set the path and set the way forward, or the way backward, if you will, to the end of unions. I mean, we still have unions in this country, but they make up less than 10%, I think, now, or less than 15%. I'd say some people have said even 6%. I don't remember what the exact number is, but it is a low number. We need to revitalize unions in this country, and Joe Biden has pledged to do that, and we need to push him to do it if he gets in, and I think he will get in to the White House. But that first clip you heard was from Ronald Reagan's debate with Walter Mondale in 1984. By the way, for those of you who don't remember, in a landslide victory, Ronald Reagan absolutely throttled Walter Mondale. I mean, it wasn't even close. Walter Mondale won, as I remember, just one state, his own, the state of Minnesota. And I think we're going to have a blue landslide this time around. I really do think so. I was saying a few weeks ago, well, it's just a question of how much will Joe Biden win by, and it still is, but I think now he's going to. But the hard work must continue here, must continue. But the second clip you heard was a clip from a vice presidential debate from 1988, just 4 years after the Reagan debate. And the vice presidential debate in that year took place. It's always one debate, or it has been. One debate in the vice presidential candidates between them. And it was in this occasion in 1988 between Lloyd Bentsen, the Democrat, and Dan Quayle, the Republican. Dan Quayle had his issues too. He couldn't even spell the word potato. He told an eighth grader or a seventh grader or whatever to write the word potato on a blackboard at one of his campaign stops. And he wrote the word potato correctly, did the sixth grader, whomever he was. Forgot what grade he was in. He wrote the word correctly, and then Dan Quayle said, no, it's spelled wrong. It's incorrect. You need to add an E on the end of it. And literally, the guy did add an E on the end of it. And I'm sure he knew that that was not the way to do it. But he literally did add an E to the end of it. And this is the guy who was debating Lloyd Bentsen, who had been in politics for many a year. And that line that Lloyd Bentsen delivered is still an iconic line. It's still an iconic line. And that line is almost, I mean, it's almost 40 years old. You know, well, 30-some-odd years old. 32 years old. It's incredible. It's incredible. You, sir, are no Jack Kennedy. And nobody can deliver that line the way that Lloyd Bentsen did. And I think, of all the debate lines that I've ever heard, that one is the one that, and again, it was in the vice presidential debate that that line came. It was just incredible. And in that election, 1988, it wasn't Ronald Reagan. 1988 was the debate with George H.W. Bush as president. I'm trying to say vice president and Dan Quayle at the same time. Dan Quayle was the vice presidential candidate under George H.W. Bush in 1988. And in that election, George H.W. Bush was the winner, and Dan Quayle was his vice president from Indiana, just like this guy, Mike Pence, is currently the vice president, and he's from Indiana. And you know what happened, right, to George H.W. Bush and Dan Quayle in the 1992 general election. After one term, you know what happened to them both? They were voted out of office. The Indiana vice president in 1988, Dan Quayle, along with the head of the ticket, the president, George H.W. Bush, were voted out of office after one term. Now we have an Indiana vice president, once again, Mike Pence, and the dictator at the top of that psychopathic ticket here in 2020. And you have some work to do. And I think we're going to have the same result as we did in 1992. Debate night is a night that is The first debate in particular, fraught with a lot of tension, the expectation. You have no clue what's going to happen. The moderator sometimes can be really poor. The moderator sometimes can be a part of the debate. The moderator can sometimes not do his or her job. And I'm hoping that tonight Chris Wallace does his job. I have a feeling that he will. I am happy to hear that Donald Trump will be receiving the first question. He'll get the first question posed to him first. He'll be the first up for that question, which is very good to hear. I hope it's not about tiddlywinks. I hope that Chris Wallace of Trump TV, and you know which network that is, asks him something of consequence, and I think he will. Chris Wallace, I'm pretty darn confident, is going to do a good job tonight. I hope. Now, I may have just jinxed him, but I think Chris Wallace, he's a sound interviewer. He needs to push a little bit more. He's interviewed Trump several times this year alone, most notably a month or so ago, or back in July, rather, perhaps. And he has pushed Trump and pushed him harder. He needs to do the same. And there's not going to be any fact-checking by the moderator. I don't know how you feel about that. I do think that the moderator should interject on a couple of the things that are not true, just flat-out lies. I mean, everything that Donald Trump is going to say tonight is going to be a lie. So there's really not much of a preview in terms of what he is going to say. He's going to lie, he's going to insult, and he's going to come up with these one-liners. And he's going to try to distract and deflect. That is what Donald Trump's job is to do. I'm not saying that that's what his job is. That is the reality. I'm just saying that's exactly what he's done. He did it when he debated in 2015 and 16. He's done it throughout this wretched term that he's serving. And he's going to do it again tonight. He's going to lie. He's going to distract. He's going to insult, and he's going to deflect. That's all you really need to know. I mean, seriously, about what Donald Trump will do tonight. Joe Biden tonight will focus on the importance of what this country faces. Focus on getting people to realize that he is going to work for the American public. And I suspect that his debate tonight will be emphasizing healthcare, emphasizing that the coronavirus was a massive failure of handling. And it wasn't just a failure of handling. He's not going to say this. I am going to say it, as I've already said. Donald Trump murdered 207,000 people. That view is still looked at with a lot of skepticism by people. Some of the people listening right now to this episode will still quarrel vigorously with what I've just said. But the truth is that this guy knew, and he admitted to Bob Woodward on tape that he knew how deadly this was. And he told the truth to Bob Woodward to make himself look good for a book that doesn't make him look good at all, by the way. While he lied to you and me and to millions of other people in the United States, and for that matter, around the world, that this virus is going to go away. It was not going to be a big deal. It's not that bad. It's like a flu. And that's murder. He doesn't have to physically put the knife in. This guy murdered people. He knew it, which is what... It's not that this guy didn't know. It's not that he's incompetent. I keep telling you. This guy is a destroyer. Donald Trump is a destroyer. Joe Biden is going to fixate on the coronavirus and what he, Joe Biden, will do to have better testing, to have better tracking and tracing, to get kids back in school properly and safely. I'm very confident that he's going to focus on those things. He's going to focus, obviously, on Donald Trump destroying this country. But he's also going to talk about, here's what I'm going to do. I am going to restore the economy, because the economy stinks. I am going to restore people's faith in governmental institutions, because Donald Trump has, like I said, he's a destroyer, destroyed the administrative state. Joe Biden is going to talk about a number of issues, obviously the Supreme Court and obviously Obamacare. He's going to talk about that. There is a case coming up that's going to be argued before the Supreme Court, whether it's got eight justices on it or nine. It's going to be argued in the Supreme Court on November the 10th, 1 week after the election. 1 week after Election Day. And those arguments are going to be made before the Supreme Court by Trump's lawyers and other lawyers to end Obamacare. It's called California versus Texas. That is the case that you should be watching out for. And the arguments, the oral arguments, are going to be heard on November the 10th of this year. Joe Biden is going to mention that tonight, believe me. And I think he would be derelict in his duty if he did not. So I guarantee you that's going to be mentioned tonight. I guarantee you the issues of immigration will be mentioned. There will be talk about the caging of kids in concentration camps in this country. Now, Joe Biden is not going to use the word concentration camps, although I will. But Joe Biden will mention that tonight, I'm confident. Joe Biden will mention the situation with Roe versus Wade and a woman's right to choose. That is going to be mentioned. Joe Biden is going to mention food insecurity and jobs and the way to get manufacturing going and to get jobs, dealing with restoring dignity, housing. I mean, I know that those aren't the subjects. You know, the subjects for this debate tonight, none of them include the topic of climate change. How can you not have that topic on a debate? Now, maybe they'll have it in debate number two, which is a town hall, by the way. Maybe they'll have it in debate number three, which is not a town hall. It's back to what you'll see tonight, which is both men standing at a podium. They will not shake hands because of the virus, and they do not have to wear masks. I don't know if Joe Biden will still wear one or not, though, but they don't have to wear masks. Apparently, they will not, but we'll see. They won't shake hands, though. We know that much. But also, there will be an audience, which I'm disappointed at, because I prefer debates not to have audiences. Obviously, with a town hall, things are very different. But when we're talking about debates, there needs to be no audience members, because it takes away from focusing on what these two people will be saying. There's going to be approximately 60 people in that debate tonight. They're going to be physically distanced, and they will be asked to wear masks. So they won't be in there without masks on. It won't be like one of Donald Trump's Nuremberg rallies where everybody's crammed in with no mask on, or, you know, a few masks here and there. And don't be fooled by the people sitting behind him who are all wearing masks. They may be the only people in the blooming rally who are. If you pan out to the crowd, none of those people, or very few of them, are wearing masks. So this is a new ploy that they put in. Oh, we'll have people behind him wearing masks. Give me a break. I mean, everything this guy does is a con. Don the con. So Don the con tonight is going to distract and deflect. Joe Biden tonight is going to argue his case. He's going to bring up, obviously, the military. That's going to come up somewhere, where he's going to bring up John McCain. He's going to bring up Donald Trump's comments about the U.S. military. U.S. military that he's the commander-in-chief of, supposedly. Being losers and suckers, those who gave their lives in the battlefield, gave their limbs, lost their limbs to fight for this country with honor and valor, and this guy calls them losers and suckers. You better believe that Joe Biden is going to talk about that. He's going to mention it. But I just think it's really a travesty that Chris Wallace, and should I really be that surprised, will not talk about climate change. And this has been the thing in most of these debates. When it gets to this point, I mean, some of them have. Look, I'm not going to pretend that that's never talked about, but it's never a priority. And by God, this planet is burning itself to death because of man-made behavior. And it's time that we really start to look at this, because Yes, it's somewhat too late now, but we can at least hopefully try to slow this down a little bit. Maybe not in the way that the Democrats are trying to slow down the confirmation process of this Supreme Court pick. But we must slow this stuff down. I mean, this has to be a conversation, a topic of conversation. But the topics tonight are, from the top of my memory, the coronavirus pandemic, the economy, racism and violence in the cities. Jeez. Racism and violence. I hope you talk about the police. You know, I hope you talk about these white wing groups, these racist groups. I hope you talk about them. And I hope you talk about Kyle Rittenhouse killing two people. And he's still, should we extradite him across the state lines from Illinois to Wisconsin? Should we do that? God. You know, I hope that Joe Biden mentions Kyle Rittenhouse. I hope he mentions George Floyd, who was murdered by these cops. I hope he mentions Breonna Taylor. I think he will. Breonna Taylor, who absolutely got murdered again last week. And I've got some audio for you that I will play sometime this week that will blow your mind, that shows you just how bad and how evil this is. And how much of a cover-up this is, too, with the Kentucky Attorney General there, Daniel Cameron. An absolute disgrace. Your blood will boil, but you will hear that audio. I've got that audio for you, and I'll play it sometime this week. You are just going to be, you're going to go spare. You know, one of these topics should be white racists and the terrorist threat they pose. Who's going to talk about that? I mean, today we have had a hearing in the House on white supremacy infiltrating police departments. That happened in the House Oversight Reform Subcommittee on Civil Rights and Civil Liberties. That happened today, a hearing on these white supremacist groups, or as I call them, white racist groups, infiltrating police departments. They've infiltrated the U.S. military. They've infiltrated police departments for centuries. I talked about Christopher Hassan, who last year was arrested and sent to jail for threatening to kill all these politicians and all these... I mean, and he had hundreds of rounds of ammunition and all these guns. And this guy was in the Coast Guard. He's a lieutenant. He was a lieutenant in the Coast Guard. And he was a white racist. He was in one of these groups. So why isn't that a subject? The FBI calls these people, these racist people, these boogaloo, these Proud Boys, you know, these white racist groups, these Nazis in Charlottesville and everywhere else. These so-called militia, they're not militia, they're thugs. These violent thugs who call themselves militia, and they're not militia, again, they are thugs. This is the number one terrorist threat in this country. Why hasn't Chris Wallace put that on his item agenda for debate? That has to be part of the debate, especially with what we've seen under Donald Trump these last 4 years. My God. Come on, Chris Wallace. Welcome back. So there are subjects that are going to be on the table, and I don't remember the economy, I think, is one of them, and also the integrity of the election and how that is going to be handled. That's going to be talked about. And then, you know, that gives Donald Trump a forum to do what he wants. You know, this is the problem, right? Trump TV's host, Chris Wallace, has picked topics, and he picked all of these topics that are going to give, at least in a couple of instances, is going to give Donald Trump a soapbox from which to lie on. L-I-E, lie. He's going to not lie down. He's going to get on that soapbox and lie. The integrity of the election. That is a wheelhouse for Donald Trump tonight. He is going to spend a lot of his time telling you that these elections are not to be trusted. He's been doing it for 4 years. He even did it last time. And it's very dangerous, and it's important to keep remembering this, that the elections systems are full of integrity in these states. It is the Republicans who are the ones who are trying to undo the integrity of these systems. It's not the secretaries of state. Now, look, some people may say that in Alabama, there's some chicanery going on, or whomever. It might be any, you know. And yes, there have been secretaries of state in the Republican Party who've definitely played roles. I mean, look at Katherine Harris from the year 2000 in Bush v. Gore. I mean, even before that case was decided infamously in the U.S. Supreme Court that December of that year. In the summer of that year, Katherine Harris participated in purging about 95,000 black people from the rolls in Florida. That contributed to making this election even a close one, the election back in 2020, 20 years ago, between Al Gore and George W. Bush. So there are, and Ken Blackwell in 2004, the Secretary of State for Ohio. I think he definitely played a role in giving John Kerry a tough time, the Democratic candidate, up against George W. Because there was certainly chicanery going on in Ohio. So if anybody's rigging anything, it's these Republicans. But Donald Trump tonight is going to stand up there and he's going to lie about that too. He's going to lie and tell you that these elections aren't to be trusted. Well, if you're so confident about your own sense of winning an election, why do you have to tell people that it's a rigged election? People who lose elections say that. People who know they're going to lose elections say that. People who rig elections say that they're going to be rigged. So I would advise you, if you're listening to this debate tonight, or if you're watching it, be sure to take what Donald Trump says with a grain of salt. In fact, know that he's lying to you. So you're going to see that. You're going to see Donald Trump do that. So some of these topics are selected to give him this forum to wax on. And the challenge is going to be not necessarily for Joe Biden, but for Chris Wallace to rein him in. The fact-checking is going to be done by many people out there in the Washington Post and CNN, New York Times. I'm even going to be doing some fact-checking. I'm going to be fact-checking this debate to the best of my ability. I mean, I've already put together some of the anticipated lies and the corrections of those lies, the actual facts, so that I can tweet them out to you at the popcorn REEL. Now, I said earlier in the previous segment that audiences should not be part of debates, and I still agree with that. I still believe that, rather. Audiences should not be part of debates because they influence what you at home might be thinking. You can't see the whole room. It's a two-dimensional thing, obviously, television. So you can't see the whole room. But when you hear people cheering and hooping and hollering, maybe you think that one person's winning or not winning. And it's very different, obviously, if you're in the debate room itself. And it's also very different if you're listening to the debate rather than watching the debate. If you watch the debate, I think there's a slight taking away, because you are focusing on the facial expressions and the pauses more, I think. But if you listen to it on the radio, or listen to it on your phone, or listen to it on a podcast, you are forced to really focus on what the two people are saying to you. And the audience comes in and out, and yeah, you hear that. But when you watch that on television, it's powerful. And the point is that audiences, I think, take away from the debaters And it becomes this whole cheering squad. It becomes very much like ESPN College Game Day, where you have the roaring crowds, not anymore, of course, because of the pandemic, where you have the roaring crowds. You used to have that, you know, a year ago, when they did College Game Day on ESPN last year. You know, you have Kirk Herbstreit and you'd have Chris Fowler and all these people, right, on ESPN sitting around a table, all four of them. And then they'd usually be in some college town as they get ready for their game. And you'll have, you know, 200, 300 fans. And they're all cheering and screaming, you know, shouting at the top of their voice. And it's this kind of, you know, sports atmosphere. And yeah, you heard it in those two audio clips that I played. The cheering, you know, I mean, debates have almost always had audiences. But the ones that had earlier on, you know, say 1960, when the first ever televised presidential debate occurred. 1960, between Jack Kennedy and Richard Nixon. And it was groundbreaking because it was the first, and second of all, because television revealed something about these two people. People who watched that debate, and this has been repeated, and it's true. People who watched that debate in 1960 thought that Jack Kennedy won. Nixon had been perspiring on TV and, you know, sweat on his brow and over his lip. And the people who listened to that debate on the radio thought that Richard Nixon had won it. So it's incredible how a medium shift makes a big difference. And the audience, well, there was an audience there. They weren't heard too much, if at all. I mean, it was a whole different time back then. Now you've got these cheering throngs. And given the fact that Donald Trump paid $50 to each of the people holding up signs for him when he announced his intention to run in 2015, or maybe he didn't pay them at all. He must have paid them Trump University money, since he only paid $750 federal income tax. And no income tax in the federal bracket paid at all. No income tax paid in 10 out of 15 years. You can bet that's coming up in tonight's debate. If Joe Biden does not bring up the income tax payment of $750 and does not bring up the fact that Donald Trump has not paid income tax in 10 out of 15 years, Joe Biden, I mean, that will be a debate loser for me personally. If Joe Biden does not mention that, and he's going to mention it because Chris Wallace is going to bring it up, and Chris Wallace should make that his first question. Donald, who do you owe $420 million to? Who do you owe that money to? You know that's going to come up. This guy's not even taking questions about this in these campaign rally briefings. He's not answering the questions, I say. A reporter asked him yesterday. He completely ignored it. Next. He is not going to be able to ignore it tonight. Joe Biden will not have to bring it up because Chris Wallace will. That will be his first question of the night. I guarantee you. And if Chris Wallace doesn't bring it up, no, he's going to bring that up. But there's so many things. There's so many things that you can expect or not expect. That's one thing you can definitely expect. But audiences do make differences to debate, I think negatively. And during the Democratic presidential primaries earlier this year, particularly in South Carolina, when the debate was happening between, I guess it was 8 candidates at the time, and Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders were all there debating, and others were, and you heard all this cheering for Joe Biden, all this loud cheering, and not really for Joe Biden, but this booing of Bernie Sanders. And most of the people who were cheering and booing were people from the South Carolina Democratic primary. Let me say again, they were from the Democratic Party in South Carolina, who, by the way, Jamie Harrison was the chair of until recently. I don't know if he still is the chair of it. I don't think he is. I'm not saying that he orchestrated this at all. because he's running a Senate race. I don't think he'd have all that much time. But this debate in South Carolina, it had all these people cheering loudly and boisterously, and that one. But I noticed that, and it was crazy. Bernie was getting booed. I mean, it was like you would have thought you were at a worldwide wrestling event, WWE. It was just crazy. And we can't have that. I don't care if they're booing him or somebody else. Heck, even if they're booing Donald Trump, as much as I would love that, I don't think that has any place in a debate. At a town hall, go for it. If there's something that happens in a town hall where you have an audience, yes, that's where you need to have an audience, because it's a town hall for obvious reasons. So I obviously do not object to having audience members at a town hall for the obvious reason it's a town hall. But when you have two people debating each other on a stage, you should not have any audience there. This is not about the audience. It's about the two people and their views and their vision for the country. One of them has a vision for the country. The other one does not. All he has is chaos, more death, more hatred, more racism, more violence, more deaths from coronavirus. That's what he's got. The other guy has some plans. He has some very comprehensive plans. Now, of course, I wish that he supported Medicare for All. I wish that he support the Green New Deal. I wish, I get it, that he would just say, I'm banning fracking right now, including the frack, because that's what Joe Biden's position is, well, I am not doing any new fracking, but I am not stopping fracking. And what he means is that he's not stopping the fracking that is going on presently. And I think he should stop it. But he's also said, well, I'm not doing any new fracking. But we do not need audiences at these debates. I think it's just, it takes away. You're focusing more on the crowd's reaction to what they're saying than what they are saying itself. I just don't like audiences at debates. Plus, as I said, you don't think Donald Trump or somebody could be paying people with what little money he has left, because he doesn't have any. With what little money he has, he doesn't have any. I mean, come on. This guy's not even a billionaire. He's not a millionaire, even barely. This guy's a fraud is what he is. And someone, you know, what if he does pay people or has someone pay people money? What if he does that? What if he does pay people to cheer and boo Joe Biden or shout out? And how are these audiences being screened? See, 60 people is not many people, but to me, it's 60 people too many when it comes to being present in the audience in a debate. I really reject having the idea of having audience members is anathema to real debate. Now, we all should look back at the debate. The only debate that Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders had back in, I believe it was March of this year. This is when the pandemic was just becoming a real issue. It was taking hold. People were beginning to understand, oh, we can't have an audience in here. It's just the two of you. Events started to get canceled. This was in March. And I thought that that debate was very good because there was no audience there. Now, I mean, overall, was it a great debate to watch? No. But when I say that I thought the debate was very good, I felt that it was very good in the sense it forced you to focus squarely on what was being said by both Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders. And I think Bernie Sanders won that debate. I mean, it's water under the bridge now. But he performed very well. Joe Biden was very good for the first 20, 25 minutes of that debate. But he lost his temper in one of those moments with Bernie. And what I would advise Joe Biden to do tonight is to not lose your cool. Donald Trump is going to try to get Joe Biden to lose his cool tonight. And if Donald Trump says anything about Bo Biden, if Donald Trump says anything about the U.S. military, I am very concerned, and I hope that Joe Biden does not lose his temper. Because he did during a, well, at least he came very close to it, shall I say, during a press conference. And I'll play that portion of audio for you. And he said, he talked about, I'm not going to spoil the audio, but what you'll hear him say at the end of it is, well, that's as close as I've come in this campaign to losing my temper.
And the revelations about President Trump's disregard for our military and our veterans. And quite frankly, if what is written in the Atlantic is true, it's disgusting. And it affirms what most of us believe to be true. That Donald Trump is not fit to be the job of president, to be the commander in chief. The president reportedly said, and I emphasize reportedly said, that those who sign up to serve instead of doing something more lucrative are suckers. Let me be real clear. When my son was an assistant U.S. attorney and he volunteered to go to Kosovo while the war was going on as a civilian, he wasn't a sucker. When my son volunteered and joined the United States military as the attorney general and went to Iraq for a year, won the Bronze Star and other commendations, he wasn't a sucker. The servicemen and women he served with, particularly those who did not come home, were not losers. If these statements are true, the president should humbly apologize to every Gold Star mother and father and every Blue Star family that he's denigrated and insulted. Who the heck does he think he is? Is it true? Well, we've heard from his own mouth his characterizations of an American hero, John McCain, as a loser in 2015. Donald Trump said he was not a war hero. I like people who weren't captured. Well, good for him. And his dismissal of the traumatic brain injury suffered by troops serving in Iraq as mere headaches not too long ago. He stood by, failing to take action or even raise the issue with Vladimir Putin while the Kremlin puts bounties on the heads of American troops in Afghanistan. It's a sacred duty. And you're tired of hearing me say this. Those of you who've been covering me for years know I get in trouble for saying, but I'm going to say it again. We have many obligations to the government. We only have one truly sacred obligation. Equip and support those who we send into harm's way. Care for their families while they're gone and care for them when they are home. That's the only truly sacred obligation the government has. Duty. Honor, country. These are values that drive our service members. It's an all-voluntary outfit. President Trump has demonstrated he has no sense of service, no loyalty to any cause other than himself. And if I have the honor of being the next commander-in-chief, I will ensure that our American heroes know I'll have their backs, honor their sacrifice, and those who've been injured will be in military parades. I'm always cautioned not to lose my temper. This may be as close as I've come this campaign. Just a marker of how deeply President Trump and I disagree about the role of the President of the United States of America.
His advisors, I am sure, have told him, you've got to stay calm. And that, to me, is the key tonight for Joe Biden, audience or no audience. In any event, when it comes to these debates, Joe Biden has got to stay straight ahead and focus on his vision and focus on his arguments, hit Donald Trump on these colossal failures and willful things that he's done to destroy this country, and then offer your own vision. Do all those things, but do not get caught in a food fight or a mudslinging contest with Donald Trump, because then you're playing on his chessboard. And when you do that, you've lost. And that's something that I think most of the Republicans who debated Donald Trump did not learn and did not understand in 2015 and 16. To an extent, Hillary Clinton was able to navigate that and do it pretty darn well. But Joe Biden now has got to be careful with this, because I think you're going to see Donald Trump try to get Joe Biden to lose his cool. And Joe Biden has got to stand up in that moment and resist the temptation to lose it. Now, he may go back after him, but I wouldn't want to be getting into back and forths and arguing with Donald Trump, because Donald Trump turns that into a spectacle. He turns that into an entertainment show, which is largely what you are going to be seeing from him tonight. You're going to be seeing, in my view, I think, an entertainment performance, because that's what this guy is. He's an entertainer. He's not a very good one, but his brand of entertainment has seduced a lot of people, including people who are not going to vote for him, because a lot of those people, I'm sure a cross segment of them watched The Apprentice, watched Celebrity Apprentice. They watched those shows. I can say somewhat, you know, oh, you know, with my little, I can proudly say that I never watched The Apprentice, which is true. I never seen a single second of it. Well, never seen an episode of it or Celebrity Apprentice. I can proudly say, and some of you can, I'm sure you can as well, that you never watched a second of that blimmin' show. But this guy is someone who is going to try to make this a circus tonight, because he's got no record to run on. He can't deal with the coronavirus pandemic because he's got blood on his hands, 207,000 people and counting. He can't deal with the tax situation that the New York Times has put in his face, because he's not even dealing with it with reporters. And he's going to stand there and talk about, whoa, fake news, and the New York Times is a terrible newspaper. It's all distraction and deflection. How much money do you owe? If Joe Biden turns around and asks Donald Trump, how much money do you owe? That will be the line of lines. That will be the line of lines in debate. That will supersede. I'm telling you right now, those clips you just heard, the one with Lloyd Benson, which I think is the best ever, you know, Jack Kennedy. If Joe Biden turns around tonight and says to Donald Trump, well, how much money do you owe Vladimir Putin? Or, you know, something like that. Who do you owe that money to? Who do you owe $400 million to? That is going to be the line of lines. I mean, I don't know about you, but that for me will break the bank. We'll see what happens tonight. And we'll see about this audience. You know, you could have some consultants in there who are booing, you know, who are shouting. I mean, so expect the unexpected, and particularly when it comes to Donald Trump, even though you know what he's going to do. Donald Trump is going to do the deflection and the lying. He's going to lie every second he can. Fact checkers will have a busy time. And I've already preemptively fact checked the guy, because he's going to repeat some of the lies that he has repeated over and over and over out of that Goebbels playbook, hoping that you're going to believe them. And the other thing is that's just that you sit there and you shake your head at is when you look at this guy, when you look at this guy, he's got no debating skill. He cannot debate. His entire thing is one-liners and interruptions, and that's all he does. He's an entertainer. See, if Joe Biden comes into this debate knowing, and he does, he understands that, then this debate's going to be a breeze for him. Honestly. Honestly, it will be a breeze. Because he's not debating a presidential candidate. He's debating a clown, an entertainer. He's debating a reality TV show star. I say that with quotes around it. Star in quotes. But that's what Joe Biden, he's debating a reality TV show star. And I think if he approaches it like that and he just talks through it all and talks over him, and, you know, meaning not necessarily getting into interruptions with him, but just standing firm and doing the job that's required, I don't think Joe Biden's going to have a problem tonight. I just don't think there's going to be an issue. We will see about the fact checks. We will see. I mean, I'm sure they're going to come. I wonder if the networks that are going to cover this thing are going to put Chiron across the screen. I think CNN will. I know they will. I don't know about MSNBC. Fox aren't going to do jack. CNN, definitely. MSNBC, perhaps, maybe. Fox, forget it. They're not going to do a thing. C-SPAN won't do a thing either. But the one thing about C-SPAN is they have unfiltered coverage. No pundits. So C-SPAN is one of the places you can go to watch this debate. This debate is going to be on everywhere. You know, you won't be able to escape the darn thing. Although, why should you? People should be glued to this debate. And I must say, I don't think it's going to sway many people. There are literally, I think there's, you know, 5% of undecideds, maybe 10 total. Just a random number, random guess. I don't know exactly. But I do know this. There are far less people undecided than there were 4 years ago. This time 4 years ago, there was still about 20 to 30% out there who still didn't know. You know, 20% or so, plus 25% who still didn't know what they were going to do. Now it's about between 5 and 10%, if that, less than 10%. So, hey, it's not going to be, these debates are not going to sway too many people, no matter what happens in them. I mean, Joe Biden could practically, look, he could piss his pants tonight, okay? And that's not going to change voters' minds one way or another about whether they're going to vote for him or for Donald Trump. Seriously, I don't think it would. Now, if Donald Trump pisses his pants, pardon me for the crude invective, I think that will just amplify the whole 4 years. That would be a metaphor for the whole 4 years of his destruction of this country. Maybe he would be pissing his pants because he'd be fearing what is going to happen to him after November 3rd when he gets whipped in this election, or when we find out maybe November 10th, and when he has to be frog marched out of the White House and into the loving arms of Cyrus Vance, the Manhattan District Attorney, and into the loving arms of the New York Attorney General, Tish James, although she will not be hugging him, I can guarantee you. And his ass will be brought up on charges for fraud and everything else. I mean, this New York Times story, forget it. I mean, this is criminality, what he's done. Let's be honest with ourselves here. It's criminal. But I don't think that any of these debates are going to sway people. I tell you, the potential debate that might is the town hall debate, where you've got ordinary people, maybe they're ordinary, maybe they're handpicked, maybe they're, you know, whomever. I mean, every audience is screened. Maybe not. I've said earlier that they weren't. But look, these town halls, though, people are screened. Maybe not so much in the regular debates, but in the town halls, you can best believe that the audience members are pre-screened. They've got questions. You know, there's research done on them. You know, all kinds of things. And some of these people are plants. Don't get me wrong. And when you see the names of these people at the town hall, research them. Who are they? I've seen this before. And there are people who are described as, oh, they're just a business owner. And then you realize that these billionaire owns some freaking, you know, billion-dollar business, or they've got consulting ties with one. It's just, that happens too, folks. You know, it's not, this is not paranoia hour. This is, seriously, I'm telling you, no audience member is just there by accident when it comes to town halls. But I think the only thing that might sway anything in this race at all might be that town hall. When you have ordinary people asking questions, those town halls resonate more than debates do. I mean, Joe Biden, that town hall he had the week before last, that resonated with people because he's very good at talking to everyday people. He may wag his finger at some of them as he did in Michigan months ago when one of them kind of confronted him about something. But he is really good at speaking to people. Donald Trump is not. He hates people. Donald Trump hates people. He didn't want to shake their hands. Remember when Olivia Choi told us that a week or two ago? Called them disgusting people? She was in the room when he said it. Maybe COVID is a good thing because the good thing about it is I don't have to shake the hands of these disgusting people. His own supporters who don't care what they're called. They don't care if he ends the life of one of their family members. They would still support this guy. Well, you know, maybe not. Because we see people like Christina Urquiza, whose father, a Trump supporter, died from coronavirus. And she certainly is not supporting him. She's voting for Joe Biden. But you know what I mean. The death cult folks, those folks are going to support him no matter what he does. You know? It's just evil. It's a death cult. But these town halls, I think, have the potential of shifting those so-called undecideds. How could you ever be undecided between these two candidates? Oh my God. What have you been doing the last 4 years? Those of you out there who are still undecided, and I think this is a complete myth. There may be one or two. But my gosh, what are you looking at? You're obviously privileged. You are not poor. If you are undecided, you are someone who's making a lot of money. Because you're trying to decide whether or not you want the guy who's going to cut taxes for people who are making, what, millions and millions of dollars? Or you're trying to decide whether or not you're going to vote for the other guy who is not going to raise taxes for anyone making less than $400,000. So you're obviously rich. You're obviously making money. Or if you're not rich, you are well off. You are comfortable. Very comfortable financially. Because only someone who is very comfortable financially can afford to be undecided at this moment. This is simple math, or fuzzy math, as George W. Bush once said. Because there's no way somebody who is poor or working class or even middle class in this country can call themselves undecided when Donald Trump has destroyed this country. He has killed this economy. He's killed 207,000 people. He wants to get rid of Obamacare. He's been trying for 4 years. The Republicans have been trying forever to crush health care in this country, ever since LBJ passed Medicare in 1967. So come on, folks. There is no undecided voter. Certainly not amongst the working class, the poor, and the middle class, or at least certainly much of the middle class. Anybody now who is undecided, I'm sorry, with all this stuff, with the tax stuff, and you know, you've got these white suburban women, some of them. Oh, you know, well, that doesn't mean he's a bad businessman. Well, damn it. You tell me, if Barack Obama, businessman or not, had paid only $750 in federal income tax in 2016 and 17, and had for 10 out of 15 years not paid any federal income tax at all, and had losses of $50 million or whatever it was, you sit there and tell me whether you think that that would be okay. I tell you what, one thing that I will say here, remember, focus on this debate tonight. It's going to be quite something. And there will be some one-liners, and I'll be talking about all of that tomorrow for sure. The debate starts tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 6 p.m. Pacific. That's an important piece of information that you might want to know in case you're not aware of it already. The debate will be everywhere. You won't be able to escape it. It will be on C-SPAN. It will be on MSNBC. It will be on NBC. It will be on Fox. It will be on CNN. It will be on PBS. Here in the United States, it will be online in all of those places. So on YouTube, you will not miss this debate. It will be on C-SPAN Radio. It will be on Sirius XM Radio. It will be on your radio dial somewhere. You won't be able to miss this debate. It'll be on your phone, your iPad, your laptop, your TV. You know, you won't be able to escape this debate. So make sure you're watching tonight. Tune in at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific time tonight for this debate. And I will be doing some commentary on the debate on Twitter at the Popcorn R-E-E-L. I will be fact-checking the debate as best I can. Fact-checking Donald Trump, of course, because he lies like a rug. Everything he will say is a lie. And also, we'll maybe do a video afterwards. I'll get on the old Twitter Periscope thing and offer a few thoughts about it and try to get your thoughts about it, too, as well. But I want to say, there is a T-shirt this week that's going on sale officially. It's the Vote Early Politocrat Podcast T-shirt. Be seen in it. And there's lots of places where you can be seen in a Vote Early Politocrat Podcast T-shirt. In fact, anywhere you go, it's still warm in a lot of places, right? I mean, certainly out here in California it is, and a lot of the western states and other places, it is warm. You know, obviously, there's a lot of global warming, sadly, that is contributing to this. I just want you to know that you can look good, and you will look good in a Vote Early T-shirt. Why? Because you look good in it, and because it comes in different colors, including black T-shirt with red logo light lettering, a red T-shirt with black logo lettering, and a purple T-shirt with gold and yellow logo lettering. You will look great in this T-shirt. And there are T-shirts for women. They are coming in all different sizes. So you will not be left short. You will look good in a Vote Early T-shirt. It says the words Vote Early across the front of it with an exclamation mark. So you are reminding people to vote early. And you look good at the same time. Well, you look good anyway, come on. But this T-shirt will just put the exclamation point on you looking good. Trust me on this. You will look great in a Vote Early T-shirt. And you're doing your little civic duty by reminding people of the importance of voting early. I mean, at least 27 states right now are doing that. They're voting early. And so what better thing to do than to remind people out there when you walk the streets that they will see that Vote Early across your T-shirt. I mean, I got some really nice compliments this week wearing that T-shirt. It's, you know, a woman came up to me and said, you know, what's a very nice T-shirt you're wearing. You know, this guy came up to me, kind of gave me a thumbs up. You know, I went into a bookstore. The lady behind the counter said, oh, I like your T-shirt. I got a smile from another lady who saw me wearing the same T-shirt, Vote Early across it. You know, it's the one that I have. I have a number of them, but the a T-shirt that, you know, has the words Vote Early across it. It's a black T-shirt and it has red lettering, Vote Early, exclamation mark. Looks great. And they obviously loved it. And they'll love you in it because you're doing something good. You're doing it without having to put the button of your candidate on it. All you have to do is say vote early. I mean, whether you vote for one or the other, and I know that you really should be voting for only one of these two people because it's not close, right? But vote early, the vote early t-shirt, I think you'll love it. So get one. You'll get one this week. I guarantee you, these things will be priced at a very good price. You know, most t-shirts these days are what? 25, well, 30, 35 bucks. 25 maybe, but 35 bucks. This t-shirt will be less than that, I guarantee you. And this week, you will be able to purchase one. I'm going to post what these t-shirts look like on my Twitter handle, at the Popcorn REEL. So get out there, get involved, phone bank, vote early, and wear your vote early t-shirt from me at the Politocrat Podcast. Watch the debate tonight and be safe out there. Please, please be careful when you walk around. There's just a lot of, I mean, I don't want to sound alarmist, but there's just a lot of, you know, a lot of energy that's not necessarily positive. And there is a lot of positive energy, don't get me wrong, because there are some good people that I see out here, and, you know, it's just really good. But there are a lot of people that are understandably tense and nervous and anxious. And a small subset of those people are acting out in ways that are not healthy. It's okay to be anxious and worried, obviously, and fearful, quite frankly. But again, we have to put these feelings into action as well for the sake of standing up for this country and its survival as we continue to pursue justice. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore.